What is up, Level Up Nation? Welcome to episode 130 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined once again by the king of the courtside, Joey. Salutations, sir.
Salutations, John. It has been an all right Monday for me. I mean, going back to work is always tough, but we always find our way to the evening when we record Level Up, and we have a great chat on here as well with us live. Shout out to Squirtle, already making some noise in chat. It's going to be a good recording, John.
Already complaining about NA. And obviously, he knows that's going to be one of the topics on this week's episode of the Level Up Podcast. But before we even touch on topics, Joey, Nation, I want to make sure you're following us, because you need to be caught up with all the happenings in the esports and gaming world. So make sure you follow the show here on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at the Level Up Podcast. That's at the LVLUP Podcast. And while you're at it, follow us on Twitter as well. You can follow Joey at Courtside King, myself at Fiasco. If you are here live in the Twitch chat, those handles are directly below those amazing mugshots you are staring at. If you're listening on the podcast later on down the road, they'll be in the show notes below. Nation, in the battle of League of Legends, Western world domination, one region asserted its dominance over the other, but both somehow managed to do their region proud. I'll touch on that later. The results of MSI are just one topic on this week's Level Up Podcast. Joey, what else are we touching on this week on episode 130?
John, on top of that, we have the starting of the mixture of LOL rosters. When League of Legends ends its spring split, rosters go crazy. We are now at the beginning of that, so we have some pretty exciting moves there. On top of that, we have a possible partnership between Sony and Microsoft in the works, which is super exciting. But last but not least, esports has its issues as well, and we are talking contract disputes, we are talking terms that should not be stated in public. So we're going to go into all that, break it all down a bit, and talk about what side we're seeing and who's at fault in these certain situations and diving a bit into them.
My goodness, Joey, did we order an extra spicy episode of Level Up today or something? I feel like we are just asking for the spiciest of spice on this week's episode. I can't wait for it. A lot of great topics, MSI, some drama, some Microsoft-Sony interaction. That I don't even want to think about. But Joey, too much spice requires something to cool it down. Perhaps a beverage. Joey, it is time for that time-honored tradition passed down from generation to generation. Joey, of course, I am talking about the one, the only, the drink of choice. Joey, for the 130th time, I need a beverage, sir.
John, I've gone crazy this week. I'm drinking a full glass of vodka.
No way. There is
no.
No,
it's water. It's water.
Look, for 0.5 of a second, you my heart was like, "Oh God, Joey's dying live on Twitch today. This is going to be absolutely horrific. I'm going to find a new host to do this. This is going to be, you know, it's going to be awful." But Joey, I'm glad to hear it's just water. I won't even touch about how awful my Monday has been, but I will just say this, you know, even though NA didn't do so well in the finals at MSI, I'm still celebrating because that was a first for NA fans. So Crown Royale, the Canadian whiskey, you've been poured into my glass of disappointment, mainly because it's a Washington Nationals glass, of Diet Pepsi and Crown Royale, because, you know, you gotta watch your figure when you sit around and play video games for 18 hours a day. I wish. Joey, you have your glass of vodka. I have my Canadian whiskey. We have our topics, so let's waste no more time. Let's get right into gaming and esports news. Let's go.
Kicking things off, John, we're gonna go right into those roster moves. This first one is intriguing to me, and I'm curious to get your thoughts. Amazing, the jungler of old for TSM, for Fnatic, for many other teams throughout his time in League of Legends pro scene. He's now moving over to 100 Thieves. He's replacing Anda over there as a starting jungler. Anda looked all right. He showed promise at times, but a lot of the time he fell below what people expected of him. It just wasn't getting it done on a pretty talented 100 Thieves roster. They've been making moves. We saw Huhi get moved out of mid lane. We see now Anda being moved in place of a veteran jungler and Amazing. Do you think this is what the team needs, John? Do you think it's just more veteran experience, or do you think Amazing is a little over the hill for this one?
It's a bit of both. He's definitely over the hill. But I think the biggest thing you need to look at right now is we saw it at MSI. We're going to touch on it later on the show, but EU is still at a completely different level than NA right now. Putting my NA fanboy aside here, EU is currently the better region. And anyone you can get from that region that has the experience, that knows what the LEC is like, that knows what competitive League of Legends is like, that can help take your organization to that next level, to help structure your organization to maybe not mimic or model or anything, but just kind of put it in the right direction that they can become competitive in the LCS, in North America, in these international competitions. I feel like this isn't a bad signing. I feel like they need that experience, but at the same time, Amazing's been around for like what feels like 50 years in esport years. Like this guy is like, you know, to use traditional sports analogy here, you know, your baseball team signing a 43-year-old pitcher because he can still throw 99 miles an hour but can't find the zone. It makes no sense. You're like, okay, well, it's cool. What good is throwing the heat if you can't throw a strike? Kind of the same thing here. Amazing. He's been great throughout his career. He's kind of weaned off a little bit. That's what happens, especially in esports, where mechanics are huge and kind of favor the younger generation. You're doing it from an experience standpoint. I like the signing, but I don't think it's going to change results for them.
No, I'm right there with you. And overall, I'm not a huge fan of the signing, to be completely honest. I feel like if they're making this move, it needs to mainly be for Amazing to teach Anda or whoever they have as that backup jungler. He has a lot of knowledge, but again, he's not there mechanically anymore. I think he brings a lot as a strategist, as well as a lot as a coach, in particular for that jungle role. I think he can really teach a young player a lot, but when it comes to performing on stage week after week, I don't think Amazing's your guy, especially with all the veterans already on that team. I mean, some days over there, he's got a ton of knowledge. Again, a bit of a language barrier. He's definitely been in NA for long enough to learn quite a bit of English, but with it not being his first language, there is going to be some language barriers there for him to communicate to younger players, and I think Amazing will help pick up that slack. But again, this is not a long-term move for me. This is a, let's bring someone in with veteran leadership, get us back on top, help us move toward the top of the table, but he's not going to be the one that pushes them into that top three, in my opinion. They need to get a younger jungler with better mechanics to do that, but Amazing can help teach him the strategy behind it a little bit more from a LCS pro scene view. And then we have a newer player coming in, one of those newer, not quite a rookie, but right around there. After being rumored last week, we now have official confirmation that Ruin will be heading to CLG, again, replacing the veteran that was previously there, Darshan, or before that, Zion Spartan, and is one of his first seasons in the LCS.
Love it.
Yeah, good old Zion Spartan. I think Ruin is super talented, John. I think he's going to be a great pickup coming over from EU as well. I think he's got a lot still to prove. I think Darshan was around the scene for quite a while. Darshan knew his way around. A lot of people knew him because he'd been here for so long. Ruin is more of an up-and-coming young talent. I think he can really settle in well, but it is going to take some time for him, in my opinion.
Yeah, and, you know, let's take a look at the NA's history when it comes to young talent. If there's a region that does incredibly well with young, up-and-coming talent, it's EU. And not to, like, point fingers at any organizations that do it better than others, but really, Fnatic's been killing it, finding young talent, bringing them in. They're kind of raw. You know, they refine their gaming skills through Fnatic, through their practicing, through their program that they have set up for them. And they go on to be some of the best players in the world. You know, Caps, for example. You know, a lot of people didn't hear of Caps. Joins Fnatic. Now he's on G2. And G2 just did something big at MSI. We'll, again, touch on that later on in the show. But, you know, that alone shows you how EU, how their scouting process is pretty much that much more superior than it is to North America. I'm kind of curious to see how CLG got their intel on this guy. He is raw. He is young. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but can CLG mold him into the player that they need him to be, to replace, you know, someone's shoes like Darshan? Like that is a massive lane to fill if you're a Ruin coming in here. So is he going to live up to the pressure? CLG has a really hardcore fan base that expects their team to perform and compete to be in the top four in the LCS. They've struggled a little bit the past couple of splits. Is this the move that they need to make to return to their top four status? I don't think so. I feel like it's a step in the right direction. It's going to need to play out a little bit. But trying to fill in for Darshan, I mean, that is a lot of pressure on a young kid like Ruin.
I really think this is a great move. I think Darshan is in a similar situation as Amazing. I think mechanically he's starting to slow down. He's not quite there. Now he's looking for other opportunities. But again, I don't feel like he's going to be that the excellent top laner he was at the beginning. He's not one of those top three anymore. I think Rune comes in as someone who showed good promise on Giants back in the formerly the EU-LCS, now LEC. That was, I think, 2018 that he was on there for both splits. But he was with Giants. He did really well. He was, in a sense, the carry for that team. It was between him and Betsy in mid lane. Giants overall, not the greatest record. I want to say they ended around 500, maybe a little less. But overall, if you're going to look at a carry on that team, it was Betsy and it was Rune. So I think now that you put Rune on a team that has a better jungler, you put him on a team that knows how to play around carries a little bit more. We already see it with the bot lane over there at CLG. I think we now see Rune start to get unlocked a bit more, and he will do better at CLG. Wadid. Good old Wadid. He went to the semifinals with G2 last year at Worlds. Now he makes his way from EU over to FlyQuest in NA. I think this is a pretty good move overall, John. I personally don't think Wadid is the greatest of players, but he has proven me wrong before. He did it last year at Worlds. He knows how to play in lanes that are meta and off-meta, and I think that's a good thing that he brings to the table. Where some supports really struggle with off-meta picks, Wadid does excel. So I do see him doing pretty well over there at FlyQuest. I don't know, again, if he, like you said with the last pick here with Rune, I don't know if he's the game changer that puts FlyQuest into a final. At the same point, I do think he slightly improves that roster overall.
Oh, totally agree. I think it definitely helps FlyQuest out. I actually like this. I actually like watching Wadid play. His play style is it's unique because he does play those off-meta champions. He plays those off-meta characters that really kind of throw people for a loop, and he plays them quite well. I mean, he's known for his Bard. When was the last time Bard was like anything meta? Like, I can't remember the last time Bard was even banned in a competitive League of Legends game that wasn't, you know, Silver or Bronze League. I can't remember the last time he was actually played. It's weird, you know, but that's kind of cool. He was on that amazing Schalke team, I believe last year. Was it Schalke or was it, hold on a second, let me double check here.
Wadid, he was on G2 last year.
On G2 last year, that defeated Schalke, pardon me, for the EU regional finals in 2018. So he has that experience. Like, he can play at that high caliber level, but he alone isn't going to be the one to make that huge change on the roster, Joey. So I think you hit that right on the head there for FlyQuest, but I do like the move. I think it is going in the right direction here. He has that experience, and you know, sometimes in NA you need to be a little quirky to win. Sometimes you need to pull out, you know, the random quirky support or the random you name a support that's not supposed to be really support, or God forbid, the Taric Sona bot lane. I see him playing that probably pretty well. I hope that doesn't come over, but I hate that bot lane like crazy. But I feel like that's something that he could excel at to really help FlyQuest.
Right. And like I said, not the game winning pick, not the league winning pick, but Wadid will bring up that roster. I think he'll pair well with the AD carry there as well. And I think it makes FlyQuest a little bit scary overall. They were, I would say, a high mid-tier team this last split. They played really well, but again, a little inconsistent at times. I think he does help bring a little bit more consistency to there, especially if the meta changes, he'll be able to adapt a little bit better. Then moving over to probably our biggest acquisition of the week, we have Prey coming out of retirement in the LCK, joining KT Rolster. Legendary organization, KT Rolster, that always lets Monte Cristo down. Now they have Prey over there. He's back from retirement. Prey's extremely talented. One of the best AD carries in the world. John, do you think this is the difference we need to see at KT Rolster?
First off, how long was Prey's retirement? Like, it wasn't even a full 12 months.
I think it was 1 month, wasn't it?
It was like
it's
nothing.
Short. It was super, super short.
He retired in April 2019. And came back May 2019. Joey, that's like my relationship with League of Legends. I rage quit, I delete, and then a week later, I'm reinstalling the game and playing it again for another 4 or 5 years.
There's no way you actually delete that game, do you?
The only time I've ever deleted the game is when I had to reinstall it because something was wonky with Riot's spaghetti coding that they have.
Okay. I'll give you that one.
But other than that, I've always reinstalled, and it's always made me sad. And I keep playing the game because I have a love-hate relationship with it. Same thing with Prey here. He has a love-hate relationship with the game. No, he doesn't. He enjoys this. He wouldn't be coming back unless, you know, there was a reason why. KT Rolster, struggling a little bit. Prey can definitely help him out. I mean, it makes sense. Prey's not that old. I believe he's 25. So, I mean, in esports, it's kind of getting up there, but he's not like Elimination playing this game at 29 competitively. So there is that to take in. And Prey still is a very talented mechanical player, too. So I think it's a good move for Prey and for KT Rolster. I feel like he has a lot more to give. I think he realized probably that he missed the game a little bit more than he would and saw an opportunity to come back and took it.
Well, not only that, John, he's not joining just any roster. This KT Rolster roster is practically stacked. I would say their bottom lane, their AD carry in particular, is the weakest point of this roster. I mean, you got Smeb in the top lane, legendary top laner, no matter what region you look at. You have Score, really strong jungler, arguably the best jungler in LCK last year. BDD, the most up-and-coming talented mid laner. Some would argue cap, some would argue rookie, but as far as young players go, BDD is definitely toward the top there, especially in the Korean scene. And then you have Snowflower, who I see as an up-and-coming support. Still a lot to prove there for Snowflower, but I've liked a lot of what he's shown so far. I think pairing him up with Prey is going to be a big, big move for this roster. Again, like I said with all the other ones, I don't think this is a league-winning move. I think SKT is still very strong, and I think they're still going to hold the handle on the league, especially as Faker gets stronger going towards Worlds. At the same point, I do think this moves them up a few spots in the standings. Taking our moves to partnerships, let's talk OnePlus. OnePlus and Fnatic, OnePlus being the big sponsor for Fnatic's jerseys this year, they have decided to expand their partnership, and I think this is a little bit of a cute way, John. This time, they're adding Fnatic mode to the OnePlus 7 series on the phone. What is Fnatic mode, you ask? It's pretty much to boost your device's performance. So it's like a high-performance mode on your phone. It's just now customized to be in Fnatic mode. I don't really know too many details as I haven't seen any explanations of it. I'm hoping it gives like an orange tint to the screen a little bit. I'm hoping it gives us a little bit of Fnatic flair, or maybe it throws a logo up there, or maybe there's a logo on the button. Not a huge thing. It's not the biggest partnership we've ever heard of, but it is a nice way for both to kind of support each other. I feel like now Fnatic can advertise Fnatic mode. At the same point, OnePlus can draw in more esports people potentially, adding that mode to the phones and then also being on the Fnatic jerseys. So I feel like it's a little bit of a symbiotic relationship here. I don't think it's going to bring in a ton of people to esports or Fnatic or OnePlus, but at the same point, it kind of helps them mesh a little bit more and continue to build upon that relationship.
I this is so dumb to me. This is like...
It costs nothing, though, practically.
It does cost nothing. Like, and I get it. Don't get me wrong. I totally understand where this is coming from, and I think it's a great... I think it's a great marketing tactic, more for OnePlus than for Fnatic. I really don't think this benefits Fnatic at all, but OnePlus can say, hey, look, take your 4G phone and enable Fnatic mode and get the legendary, rare, highly talked about, but never seen... 5G, the legendary 5G that really doesn't exist at all. I look, like, what are they gonna do? Are they gonna build phones? Are they gonna governor phones, if you will, to slow them down a little bit until they enable Fnatic mode? I mean, it just sounds so like it. Why? It doesn't. Why? Look, make Fnatic mode where the entire layout of the phone changes to orange and black. You get a killer Fnatic logo in the background on your wallpaper that kind of moves around, that kind of shoots off fireworks and whatnot. You know, when you type messages, you know, Reckless pops up and goes, messages. And then, you know, hit email, and then, you know, someone else from Fnatic pops up and goes, email. In whatever language you know, why not? Do something cool like that, but not... gonna make my phone faster. Really? Make my phone faster because it's in Fnatic mode? Give me a break.
You just want those Reckless voiceovers. I know.
I want those Reckless voiceovers. This is exactly what I want. I want Reckless to be my ringtone, please.
No, I mean, you bring a lot of creative ideas to the table, and I think that is definitely a way they could expand this mode later on. I think one of the ways they're looking at this, though, is just to throw the name Fnatic up there and see if that draws any other people in particular. And I think this is one way to do that without overwhelming them with these pop-ups of Reckless and I was going to say caps, but rip that one.
Overwhelming. Okay. I think it should be pop-ups of Reckless would be the only pop-ups I would not block. You know, I want Reckless 24/7 all over my phone. Why not?
Well, I think this is great, but just imagine when T-Mobile adds sneaky mode.
Oh, God. You think you unlocked your phone, but really, you didn't. It's a trap.
Oh, yeah, that's not safe for work on that one. But overall, I mean, like, with this mode in particular, have you ever had a laptop where you have the different settings? Like, there's battery saver and low power and high performance and all those type of modes. I think this is just the phone's adaptation of that, to be honest. I feel like that's all this is, and it's really just a brand name more than anything at the moment.
Okay, so let's take your laptop theory here. Okay, uh-huh. If I'm on a laptop and I'm not plugged in into an outlet, and I put it on, like, super-duper kick-butt mode, you know, high right. energy, my battery lasts me all of, what, 3 hours? Where it's on normal, you know, we'll say three. We'll say it's got, you know, like an 18-core lithium-ion battery in there. Let's say, you know, 3 hours there. On normal, you get 7, and on power saver, you get 12. Okay, cool, awesome. Let's talk about your cell phone now, Joey. Joey, in a regular day, how long does your battery last on your cell phone?
Oh, I can't tell you the answer because I charge 3 or 4 times throughout the day.
There you go. So are you going to tell me your phone that already drains 3 to 4 times a day, you're going to want to put in fanatic mode to make it drain even faster so you can have to charge it 6 to 8 times a day? That doesn't make any sense. Just
Right. Now, wait a minute. Slight disclaimer. My phone is almost 5 years old at this point. Wow. So, yeah, it's been around for a minute. So, at the same point, I don't know how new phones, how long they last per charge. I mean, you probably have a better idea than I do over there.
I mean, look, you have an Apple. Apple has been caught and pled guilty to, like, you know, draining batteries. It's fine. It's whatever. You should upgrade because, what, you said you had a... You had the original iPhone.
It's like, and maybe it's not 5, maybe it's 4 years old. I have the original 6 whenever that came out.
Yeah, okay, so
it's like 4 generations or something behind.
At the end of the day, you need a new phone.
I definitely charge
my phone.
It's
maybe
not going to be supported come September, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I charge my phone once every other day. Yeah, it's great. And, you know, I go to the gym, I listen to music nonstop, I have got GPS going. You know, granted, my phone, you know, is one of the newer iPhones out there, but still, once every other day, it's great. It's perfect. It's a healthy battery is what I'm trying to get at. I still would not enable Fanatic mode on my iPhone because then I'd probably have to charge it once a day. I mean, I just don't understand why. Like, why?
No, I hear you. I'm curious. I don't know if Pat's still in chat, but if my phone were to get dropped down an elevator shaft in Fanatic mode, would it be easier to find? We'll just leave that one for chat and move on.
It would still cost $2,000 to retrieve.
Oh, my gosh. But at least you hear Reckless's voice from the elevator shaft.
I'm down here.
Hopefully it's not a too soon. Anyway, moving on. Sony and Microsoft. This is one of the bigger pieces of news this week. So Sony and Microsoft are continuing to explore a strategic partnership here centered around Microsoft Azure and Microsoft's Azure AI. John, this would be huge on so many fronts. Obviously, console gaming being one of the biggest ones, with Microsoft and Sony being competitors, we'll say, even enemies at times, it feels like. And Nintendo, it looks like, might buy into this as well. This is really big in the sense that not only are you bringing these competitors together over one platform to work together, but I think even the bigger story might be the fact they're choosing Microsoft Azure, the Azure of a giant competitor who's been competitor for years, almost a decade, I would say. You're choosing that over Google's cloud as well. So with Google entering into gaming with Stadia, they're pretty much saying, hey, we align with the people who have already been in this space. We're going with our biggest competitor in Microsoft, and it looks like Nintendo goes that way as well.
Yeah, I mean, kudos to Sony for inventing the cloud and everything else in regards to it. You know, first they invented cross-platform. You know, they had a whole press release about it. It was a big deal. Like, everyone's like, whoa, cross-platform, is that even possible? Like, Xbox and PlayStation and PC and Nintendo, it just doesn't even make sense. It's 2019. That makes no sense, right? I think it was 2018 when it came out there. So kudos to Sony for doing that. And now we have the cloud, and Sony's like, hey, look, I'm gonna grace humanity with the cloud. Okay, look, as much as I love to dog on Sony when it comes to, like, their arrogance and everything, I actually like this move by them. I feel like this way they both develop technology that benefits both of them, but not necessarily working together in the sense of a cloud storage system doesn't make, you know, doesn't give Sony the edge over Xbox. They're both going in that direction. They're both trying to do the same thing. It's better when two major corporations who have the same end goal in mind work together to put together the best version of itself. Now, if you tell me that this cloud, if I can upload a game to it and save it on a PlayStation and open it up on an Xbox or a PC, that would be massive. But other than that, I mean, I feel like this is a good thing. I feel like this makes sense for everyone involved to come together to hammer out this technology going forward for gamers.
Yeah, and like I said, the biggest thing is the fact they're working together on this, and I almost feel like this is the people who've been in gaming for decades saying, hey, we're going to stick together. Google's trying to come in here and take it over like we've seen Amazon and Google do so many times before. Sony's saying, no, we're going to partner with our biggest competitor. They're really just jumping right into this full-blown, and I love that fact. Microsoft is the biggest winner here, obviously, because they're going to get, I don't know what kind of agreement they worked out, if there's any royalties or anything like that as far as what games get put on Azure Cloud. But at the same point, Microsoft's developing this. Microsoft's going to have a hand in it. Microsoft is even going to have a bit more knowledge, it feels like, on the Sony end and the Nintendo end with this move in particular. So Google's got their head up in the clouds, but it looks like Sony is actually making pretty good moves here between them, Microsoft, and Nintendo. Really, Nintendo in general, we talked about it a lot. I'm curious what other partnerships we see between them and Microsoft, but it does look like they're going to pull the trigger on this one as well. Let's move on, but still talk... Yeah, this is still Microsoft. Minecraft Earth. So this recently got announced. I believe it was today, yesterday, maybe even the day before. But this is going to be your next big AR title, John. I know you are a huge mobile gamer who absolutely loves mobile gaming. I do find this one somewhat intriguing. I'm not a Minecraft player myself. I'm a decent mobile gamer here and there. I don't really jump into the AR stuff too much. Pokemon Go had me for a couple months, and then they did a bunch of dumb things on the higher level, in my opinion, and it ended up falling apart. We've touched on that enough, though. Minecraft, I think, is a huge game, and I think this is a great game to expand upon. When you look at franchises, Pokemon's huge. Minecraft is also pretty darn big, though, as well. Now you're bringing it into an AR feel. They demoed this at, I want to say it was E3 or Gamescom or something a couple years ago, where they had the Microsoft HoloLens, which is that pair of glasses, and they showed where you can pretty much build in Minecraft through the glasses in an AR sense. Now bringing it to more people who didn't buy those HoloLens glasses, but making it more accessible via phone. If anyone's going to succeed in this space, I think Minecraft has a decent shot at it.
Yeah, I think Minecraft is going to be the big winner here. I feel like for the younger generation that plays Minecraft nonstop, even to this day, tons of kids in my neighborhood play Minecraft, talk about Minecraft, that and Roblox. Minecraft nonstop. And a lot of these kids are reaching that age where their parents are going to give them smartphones. And they're going to download Minecraft. They're going to play this AR version of the game. They're going to be able to go around building and collecting things in the real world through this augmented reality. I think it's absolutely fantastic that Minecraft is doing this. Minecraft, a huge, huge, huge game. So successful in the gaming world. I feel like this is the one that can really take AR gaming to the next level and really bring in a lot of people into the world of AR gaming through Minecraft. I think this is a great start for AR. Well, not really start. It's been around for a couple of years, but I feel like this is what's really going to propel AR gaming to the next level, and Minecraft is going to be the power behind it, and it's going to be absolutely fantastic. I may even download this myself when it comes out.
Right, because you have Minecraft and you have Microsoft behind it, which is another huge giant behind it as well. And on top of that, John, I think one thing this has over a Pokemon Go, over a Harry Potter Go, over all those other AR titles, I think the big thing is the fact you have a game that you can implement this in already. So you can pull from the Minecraft mobile version, from the PC version, from all these other versions, your already made creations, and pull them right into the AR mode. You're not starting from scratch. You don't have to go capture these gems. If you've already made servers, they're already there, and you can just pull from them and create from them. So it does look like it's a kind of a fusion between Minecraft, the mobile game, Minecraft PC, just Minecraft in general, along with the Pokemon Go type of style. So it looks like you can create, you can collect. The collect feature says Minecraft Earth features many of the mobs you know and love, along with a bunch of new ones. Over time, you'll get the chance to breed unique variants as well and use them to populate your builds. I think that's kind of cool, too. I hope they make some that are mobile exclusive almost to even push this a little bit more. I know some people hate exclusive content. Some people love it. With something like Minecraft, it's so easily accessible in a sense. I think you can do it in this mode. Collaborate, meet up with like-minded creators. I think this is going to be a huge thing for this as well, John. if we have a big table somewhere, and let's say there's a bunch of people that play Minecraft at a college or whatever, now they can pull it up, clear the table, and they can play with their whole thing right there in the lunchroom. You might look like a bunch of whack jobs, don't get me wrong, but at the same point, I think this is a really cool collaboration. And I'm also thinking, like, as we dive more into technology and as schools continue to evolve, I could see this becoming almost like a new science fair in a sense. Like, you don't want to stunt the growth of the different inventions people can come up with, but maybe digital inventions is a different science fair type of thing you have later down the road, and you have pretty much Minecraft environments. Or maybe like an architecture class. Like, the architecture program can buy into this and try to build stuff together as teams. Like, there's just so many ways to do this, and I think it is really, really good. I don't know if I sent you a link, John, but I pulled up the main link. And in chat, you can link this up too. It's minecraft.net/en-us-earth. You can probably just type Minecraft Earth in. But the last picture, it almost looks like Slender Man standing behind this kid.
Yeah, I saw that one also.
It's like super, super sketch.
It's kind of like in Pokemon Go where you're like wait. There's a Squirtle right over there. And you like you quickly take a picture of it, and it's like a Squirtle's on top of someone's head just because of like the random like place that everything like lines up on the AR for the game. The same thing. It's terrifying. Like the one with the chickens next to the guy working in the ice cream car and everything too. It's just it's weird. It's just, I don't know. It's cool. It helps create really awkward photographic moments, if you will. So I don't know. The whole AR thing is kind of cool. And Joey, just real quick, having that big table and building Minecraft stuff, you know, in a college setting. Yeah, it does look weird, but as someone who played World of Warcraft in the Johnson Center at George Mason University for a time period with some friends, I fully endorse nerding out in student unions on campus. It's a lot of fun. It brings people together and makes people look at you, but you will never know because you're too immersed in your video game.
Speaking about looking at you, can you give your niece a shout out in chat? Because Nightbot is attacking her.
Nightbot is absolutely destroying my niece in chat. So Maddie, thanks for tuning in. I appreciate it. Thank you for the support. And hope you enjoy the show.
And someone remind us to check these Nightbot settings.
Yeah,
one of our other streamers has set this up.
Nightbot is destroying my niece in the chat room. It's awful.
I don't even know why. It must be the caps or something. That's the reason.
Yeah, like it doesn't even show us
caps. I guess
it doesn't even show us like what the messages were in the chat. It just says, you know, stop spamming caps, or you know, stop spamming caps warnings or stuff like that. But it doesn't actually show us. But Nightbot, my gosh, the banhammer coming out.
Yeah, they got this thing a little overzealous over here.
We need to tune Nightbot down just a little bit.
Someone who does need Nightbot, though, and needs the hammer down on them is Echo Fox. We do have an update on that situation. The LCS investigation into Echo Fox over hate speech comments has concluded. The LCS has concluded its preliminary investigation into the alleged comments made by a member of the Echo Fox ownership group. We do not know the name of that particular person. I think that's fine because their investigation obviously figured that out. Hate speeches, threats, bigotry have no place in the LCS. We have directed Echo Fox to take appropriate corrective action within 60 days. This all coming from Chris Greeley, the LCS commissioner. He goes on to state, if Echo Fox does not take action by removing any individuals whose actions violate league rules and agreements within the required time period, the league will take formal action that may adversely impact the future of Echo Fox in the LCS. AKA, if they don't get rid of the guy, Echo Fox is most likely gone. They'll probably sell the spot. Depending how the contract was written up, they could end up selling it just from the league itself, and Echo Fox really doesn't benefit. I really don't know what the contract looks like, though. So it could simply be the LCS says, hey, if you don't get rid of this board member, it violates our agreement. Echo Fox, you've got to sell. So I think that's probably the more likely pitch here. At the same point, guys, racist comments never get you anywhere. Why does this keep happening in sports and esports all over the world? Like, come on, people.
It's 2019. It's not the 1940s. It's not the 1950s. Granted, it was wrong back then also, but it was a lot more commonplace back then. But this is 2019. We've evolved as a people. This is absolutely stupid. And esports has enough to fight against in this world to try to show how legitimate esports and gaming is, and that it's a legitimate career path, that you can profit off of it. You know, I want to get to the point one day when we can turn on TV and people aren't complaining that esports is on ABC. that it's not on ESPN, that ESPN's not tweeting about it, you know, on Twitter or, you know, putting stuff on Facebook or Instagram or whatever they're doing about esports, and people going like, oh, what is this video game crap on TV? We have enough to fight against in esports and gaming. Racism is stupid. It's absolutely stupid. If, you know, it has zero place in esports, it has zero place in society, zero place as a human race. It's absolutely stupid. Echo Fox was already making great strides trying to get this investor out of their organization. This just goes to show you that you can vet your investors as much as you want, but sometimes some things get overlooked. They can hide things incredibly well, and then when the true colors come out, you got to find a way to get rid of them, because it is going to destroy your organization. And really, when it comes to Rick Fox, tell me a bigger name. Tell me a bigger name that has had an impact in the media nationally and internationally on a crossover scale than Rick Fox. There is none. There is none. There honestly is none. You know, Gordon Hayward, okay, cool. He plays in the NBA. He plays League of Legends. He streams a little bit. Okay, Rick Fox is a former NBA player who had an amazing career, who is a multimillionaire, who has connections in the media all throughout the world. And he jumps into esports, brings that demand to know more with him because of who he is, and we start making strides in the right direction, and then this moron comes along and decides to send emails with probably one of the most offensive words in any language in the world riddled throughout the entire thing. And it's not the first time he's done it. It's not the second time he's done it. This guy needs to go. I applaud Riot for stepping in to really put a deadline on this. It's needed. This guy needs to go. He needs to be permabanned throughout everything. This guy needs to be nowhere near esports until otherwise said. I know Riot is great about permabanning people. This dude needs to be permabanned and stay permabanned. There is no reforming stupidity.
Right. But it does have to come through the organization. The organization, sure. Obviously, he's the... I don't remember exactly what he is. He's an investor and a board member, I believe, if I remember correctly. So he is pretty high up there in Echo Fox, and he does have decision-making power, and that's why we see Rick Fox saying, hey, if this guy's not removed, I will be leaving myself. And I think that's the bigger loss for Echo Fox here. Not only are you pulling in a ton of bad publicity, but if Rick Fox leaves, you lose a ton of connections, you lose a ton of respect, and even connections that Rick might not have tapped into yet might be out just because Rick is no longer there. So I really think Echo Fox has a lot to lose by keeping this guy. Not only do you look like a racist organization, but on top of that, you're losing a lot of connections as well. Echo Fox, they need to work on this. They need to work on the way they do roster moves, but this in particular needs to be solved first. For me, the LCS spot is going to be worth so much. I think it was a bargain getting in at $10 million, to be completely honest, the way this league continues to grow. I think it's the best investment in esports right now, and if Echo Fox really wants to make a name for themselves in esports, they really need to hold on to this and get rid of this guy. On top of that, and chat brought up a good point, and this is one I was thinking about too when I was typing this part up, what are your thoughts on Immortals now? With Immortals, if this Echo Fox thing does not get taken care of, if Echo Fox gets told they have to sell the spot, do you see Immortals buying this spot and canceling the Opta Gaming sale? Do you think that sale might be slightly contingent on how this works out?
Not really. I think the Optic deal has a lot more that it brings with it, because it comes with an Overwatch team. There's so much that comes with that Optic deal versus an Echo Fox. Echo Fox has kind of pulled back their reach a little bit in the esports world. They kind of retracted some teams. They're almost in rebuilding mode, if you will. The Optic spot, to me, for Immortals, makes a lot more sense. Granted, the biggest question with that Immortal spot and Optic being that if Immortals does buy that, what does it say for LA Valiant that's owned by Immortals in the Overwatch League? So, theoretically speaking, it would make more sense for them to go this direction with Echo Fox if, for some crazy reason, in 60 days, this moron is still in Echo Fox. It makes more sense for Immortals to go this direction than it would in Optic, but I feel like Optic has more of an upside for Immortals versus just straight up buying Echo Fox.
Yeah, it really depends what they want out of this deal. If they're simply looking for League of Legends and looking maybe to get a little bit of a sellback on certain spots, then I think the way to go is Echo Fox overall. I mean, that's your bargain deal in a sense. You can get that LCS spot. If this, again, I think these moves will be made. I think this guy will be getting rid of and Echo Fox will keep their spot. But overall, if they don't, I think that is the deal for Immortals. unless they want more. If they really want more, you get a second Overwatch League spot, and you can really, I believe the contracts of the players are owned by the organization, so they could pick out the players they want the most. They could pick and choose here and there, move some players from Houston to LA, and then sell the spot. They could also look at the CS team, because they both have CSGO teams. They could pick off some of those players as well if they wanted to move those over to Immortals and then get rid of the spot. So there's a lot of different ways you can look at it and a lot of different sales they can have. On top of that, I know it's not the biggest thing, but console gaming Optic is pretty strong in. Call of Duty as well, moving to PC recently. Optic has a pretty good Call of Duty team. They also have a really good Gears of War team. I want to say Gears of War has won the championship like one or two times in a row at least. Really strong teams as far as some of these console games, and some of them moving to PC now as well. So Optic has got some really good teams in smaller scenes, as well as some big spots and big scenes that they could potentially pull players off of as well as sell. So it really depends what Immortals wants here. As well as, will League of Legends let them back in? Will Riot Games let them back in after denying them a spot? I don't really know what the League of Legends procedure is as far as getting those spots.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, because the big rumor was the reason Immortals wasn't allowed to get a franchise spot when the LCS did franchise was because of that LA-based Overwatch League team at the time that Riot really felt was a... I mean, it is a competition to League of Legends, but you know, they felt like it was a conflict of interest. Who knows? Will Immortals ever be allowed to return? Personally, I think they should have been allowed in, but I'm not Riot. Riot has to protect their own interests, but it's a very valid point you bring up, Joey. Would Riot even let them back?
Right, and I don't know if Riot has to approve any potential buyers that easily could be worked into these contracts, so would not be surprised if they put that in. At the same point, you look at Team Envious. They were able to do both. There's one other one that I'm forgetting. Cloud9 is able to do both as well with London Spitfire. So there's definitely teams that are out there that are in both leagues. So I think now that Riot has seen them be symbiotic, they pull a lot of different audiences in as well. League of Legends obviously doing very well viewership-wise. Overwatch has had great peaks, but has also had some lows. So I think overall, League of Legends will be able to look at this. Riot Games will say, hey, it is okay to be in both leagues. It will work. Marketing will work. And really, to pull in viewers from the other league to League of Legends would be more beneficial to them. So I think overall, if they do buy a spot, I think Riot approves them. Okay, this next one's big. We're not going to spend a ton of time on it because we really have to wait to see what sides are still coming out for it. But FaZe Clan and Tfue have a legal dispute over what Tfue states is an exploitative contract. Overall, John, this comes out. So big, popular streamer on Twitch, Tfue, playing Fortnite. Extremely popular. Really cannot emphasize that enough. He's not Ninja, but he's right up darn with him. He's very, very good at the game, and he's very good as a streamer and a personality. Recently, he just filed a lawsuit, or his lawyers filed a lawsuit on his behalf, alleging that employer FaZe Clan has taken financial advantage of him by way of the exploitative contract that we mentioned before and unlawful behavior on behalf of FaZe Management. This coming out of The Verge. The lawsuit states that FaZe has deprived Tenny, Tfue in this case, of certain business opportunities, failed to pay the Fortnite player his share of brand deal revenue, and grossly undercut his earnings by taking up to 80% of his earnings in some situations. The suit also argues that FaZe is operating in violation of Californian law, specifically the Talent Agency Act, by essentially operating as a talent agency within or without a proper license of abiding by the necessary regulations. On top of that, we see FaZe coming back out. FaZe made a statement on Twitter stating, "We're shocked and disappointed to see the news of Tfue's press article and lawsuit over the course of our partnership with him, which began in April 2018. FaZe Clan has collected $0 from tournament winnings, $0 from Twitch revenue, $0 from YouTube revenue, $0 from any social media platform. In fact, we've only collected a total of $60,000 from our partnership. While Tfue has earned millions as a member of FaZe Clan, while contracts are different with each player, all of them, including Tfue's, have a maximum of 20% to FaZe Clan in both tournament winnings as well as content revenue, with 80% to the player. In Turner's case, neither of those have been collected by FaZe Clan. We're proud of what we've accomplished together over the past year with Turner, and we'll continue to support him." Okay, John, before I dive any more into my thoughts on this, what are your overall thoughts on this lawsuit coming out?
All right, so shocker, we have two sides here. One side saying they're taking 80% of my money, and the other side saying, we haven't taken any of your money. We've only taken $60,000 of any of our partnerships, and we've made you a millionaire, essentially. And I'm sitting here going, one, the first thing I want to point out, kids, if you are good enough to get a pro contract, please let your parents read the contract. Please tell your parents to hire a lawyer to read the contract. First off, Tfue, you openly admitted you signed a contract allowing your organization to take 80% of your money. That is a terrible business deal. An 80-20 split? Are you kidding me? That is awful. If you win $1 million, you're essentially saying you get less than a quarter of a mil and your organization gets that's are you serious? Really? That's a terrible, terrible deal. Now, FaZe Clan, you're saying that's not what it says at all. That you know, oh, we haven't taken any money. We've been incredibly nice. We've given a place to live, blah, 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 blah. He's in the streaming house, blah, blah, blah. Doing all this. You're not really denying the contract. You're saying you just haven't taken his money. You're saying you could have, but you didn't. So really, both parties here are at fault. If FaZe Clan is not in compliance with California law, that's a huge issue. Ultimately, I feel like Tfue's just—he's just not happy with his current situation with FaZe, and he's trying to find a way out. But you know, this is kind of a really public battle. That when you take a look, how esports is still a developing scene. Kind of everyone in esports knows everyone in esports. By doing this, you're almost kind of blackballing yourself. If FaZe ends up dropping you from your contract, from everything involving FaZe Clan because of this lawsuit, which they probably will. I don't know any employer that keeps an employee around that's suing them. You know, you think you're going to be able to go to another organization? You know, that's going to, you know, there's consequences to everything is essentially what I'm trying to get at. You know, he may be doing the right thing, but as an organization, you're going, hey, look, this guy's popular. Is he going to be worth the risk? Or is this move going to force organizations to be more honest, to be more open, to realize that, hey, look, with the way esports still is growing, the direction it's currently trending in, we need to treat our streamers, our players, the same way we treat our pro athletes in traditional sports, the same way we treat, you know, Hollywood actors and actresses where they have guilds and they have representation and they have unions and everything to make sure that they're not getting screwed over. I feel like this is actually something good in a sense, that this is really going to make the argument for unions, for players, for streamers, for entertainers to really come together to ensure these organizations aren't screwing people over. Because if this comes out that it is true, that's an 80-20 split, that is horrific. Absolutely horrific. And I do know I'm looking at a report from the Hollywood Reporter. They actually have the lawsuit, all documentation of it. It is roughly, to give you an idea, 23 pages long. It's a 23-page lawsuit, and it goes in deep. I mean, it pulls everything out. Nothing's redacted. Everything is straight there for you. If you have time to read it, it's actually a pretty decent read. It goes into his contract, into California law, what is legal, what isn't legal, and kind of proves a legitimate point for Tfue. So I think it's interesting.
Man, I think both parties are idiots, if you ask me.
Well, they are.
The fact that Tfue signed this contract in general is dumb. Like, yeah, that was a bad move on his part. You got to get a lawyer to look over this. Now you obviously have a lawyer involved, but why sign it first? Now you're playing against the law here with California. Obviously, it could still rule in your favor, but you could have stopped all this up front at the same point. That's the big thing for me as far as Tfue's side. I really think it should have been tackled up front. And I think this is one big argument, and I feel like we've had it before as well, John. Esports needs to bring agents on more predominantly. We don't really see a union for them. We don't really see esports agents as a big thing right now. Obviously, there's a few of them popping up here and there. You and I have talked to a few of them. As far as we had one of their players on at one point, Justin, with Moody in the NBA 2K League. There's a few other guys that came over from EU and started one as well. So they're starting to pop up, but there's really no, I would say, predominant one out there yet. There's no big, big agents that players have adopted to. Once we see more of that in esports, I think stuff like this starts to go away. And this is not the first time it's happened. It's one of the first times we've seen a really, really popular streamer have this happen. But we've seen it happen in esports so many times. We've also seen organizations say they're going to pay players and never pay players. We've seen tournament organizers say they're going to pay people who win big tournaments, and then they owe millions upon millions of dollars to these players that never get paid out. So it's all over the place. Organizations, tournament organizers, players, it just continues to build upon that. Now the big thing is that we're going from professional players to expanding into that streamer realm as well. Streamers are people too. I know there's a lot of them out there you and I follow, a lot of them who follow the show as well. When you have streamers out there, you have to find a way to protect them. Tfue being one of the biggest ones out there. Ninja obviously big as well. And there's so many other ones out there too. I think as we get closer to this, we have to see more agents coming out, not only for the pro players, but for the streamers and entertainers as well. I think hosts are eventually going to get it as well. I would say even like MCs, like eventually esports is going to continue to grow. And as you get more and more entertainments in the industry of gaming and esports, you're going to have more agents and unions build up as well. I think that would take care of this up front. At the same point, if you're a 20-year-old about to sign an esports contract, and I know there are a few of you out there looking at contracts that we've talked to in particular, make sure you get a lawyer to look over this stuff. You do not want to sign away 80% of your revenue. Obviously, Tfue was big when he started. Now he's even bigger. And FaZe has an argument here. A lot of that does come from the FaZe Clan name as well. FaZe Clan has a lot of Twitter followers, a lot of social media followers. Every tweet they send out is going to help him grow his stream. And it's obviously helped here. When you look at this overall, exploitative contract or not, FaZe helped Tfue grow. And I think when the lawyers, when the court end up looking at all this overall, everyone's going to get some kind of split in this. I don't feel like there's a way that one side wins all out completely, because that kind of abolishes FaZe Clan's name if you favor inside of Tfue. At the same point, you have to acknowledge like the growth of FaZe Clan and what they've helped Tfue grow, and vice versa, because he's obviously helped bring viewers to FaZe Clan as well. So there's a whole bunch of things with this, and everyone is saying different things. John, you brought up a really good point as far as FaZe Clan has said. They specifically said they had not collected anything. They've said $0 collected. That does not mean $0 owed. We could see a lot of this coming out because FaZe Clan is deciding to collect. They could be saying, hey, it's been great, but it's time for us to get our check. It's been about a year. This could have come out in April at the 1 year mark. I would not be surprised. So I think that could be a lot of it. At the same point, Tfue is so big now, he does not need FaZe Clan. This could also be his way of trying to say, hey, let me cut ties with this organization by breaching my contract or breaking it more cleanly than simply saying I'm gone. Because then you have to pay a bunch of penalties and different things like that, depending on how the contract's structured. So I think this might also be him saying, I'm going to be an independent person. I don't need esports organizations anymore, especially in Fortnite. Fortnite does no respect at all. Epic Games does not really care about esports organizations. They've shown that time and time again. This is a great time for him to split away, be that independent streamer, cut all ties. He doesn't need to give any percentages to anyone. He's already taken the FaZe Clan audience into his own as much as he can in that area. So at this point, I think it's honestly a win-win if they break up in a sense. Obviously, FaZe Clan, a little bit of a loser here. But at the same point, you don't want these legal disputes, and you don't want them with a huge streamer as well. Whew, my voice hurts.
Your voice, I mean, you were going on a pretty good rant there. I like it. Normally, I rant. That was a good Joey rant. I'm proud of you.
I'm used to dealing with contracts, and it really drives me crazy that, I mean, a 20-year-old, they're over 18. They should be smart enough to read through a contract or at least ask someone to read through it. I mean, there could have been family issues involved. Maybe you said, screw you, parents, I'm just going to go sign this contract. But you got to at least do your summer reading, people. Like, come on here. Let's not sign these contracts to give away 80% of our revenue. Ay, ay, ay. Into the next story, unless you want to expand on that anymore. Anything else there, Mr. Nat's Cup?
You're catching me mid-drink, sir. Allow me to enjoy
that. That's how I like to do it.
My goodness.
Okay, let's take a move on then, because we are getting a little later on here. The NCAA has said no to esports for the time being. I think you and I are both in agreement of this. The NCAA has done some things pretty well, and they've done a lot of things not so well in college sports. I would prefer a different governing body for collegiate esports, in esports in general. I feel like the NCAA, like I said, they've not done everything terribly, but there's definitely been holes in their philosophies and the way they've gone about things. I think bringing someone in new for esports, but also maybe taking some of that talent from the NCAA, from some of these professional sports leagues into that esports governing body organization, I think would be a good move. At the high school level, they're doing a great job. Play Versus has been exceptional in that area in particular. I think we need someone like a Play Versus at the collegiate level. I don't really want to see the NCAA take on esports personally. I would not be surprised if it happens down the line, though.
I would love to see the NCAA get out of college sports, period, and let a different governing body come in for a little bit just to show how much better they can do it. I don't want the NCAA touching esports. I don't want them anywhere near esports. I feel like they're going to take a step back. And the developers, I know like Riot's even talking about like putting together kind of like an organization to oversee collegiate esports for their scene. I feel like once that takes off and the NCAA can see how lucrative it can be, they'll jump right in and be like, whoa, 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 pump your brakes. We're the NCAA. We need to oversee any kind of competition, competitiveness of video games, the e-gaming and the whatever words, you know, baby boomers come up with to clarify what esports really are. Yeah, I don't want the NCAA anywhere near this. Let esports be esports. Let it be governed by the people who understand it and they know what's going on. Yeah. Thanks. Bye. Bye, guys.
Adios. Overwatch has announced its anniversary event. John, the celebration begins on May 21st. I'm sure you and I will raise a glass to it and have a little bit of fun gathering some skins. Is there anything in particular that sticks out to you with the Overwatch anniversary event or any skins they've shown so far?
Yeah, so far there's a new Winston skin. He's a gargoyle. Looks pretty legit.
You mean Winstone?
Winstone, boo. You know, maybe now he'll stay on the payload and he'll just kind of sit there like a gargoyle does and the payload can continue to move because no one stays on the payload because everyone loves Cloud9. But yeah, I love the skin. I think it looks great. It's definitely different. The anniversary event begins May 21st. I'm really excited for the rotating game mode. I feel like if the rumors are true, you're going to get everything from, you know, Junkenstein's Revenge to all the PvE experiences we've had. I think we've had three of them in total now, with the most recent one being in Havana. That was really cool. Like, that's rumor has it that's going to be in the rotating game mode as well. May's Snowball Offensive, which is a personal favorite of mine. All of it's going to come back, and all the cool anniversary skins from the past anniversary events are going to be, you're going to be able to purchase them, get them through loot boxes, and so on and so forth. Really, really, really excited for the anniversary event, and I got me some patching to do, Joey. I got to patch me some Overwatch.
Yeah, I got to patch up too. I played a little bit of Baptiste. I feel like it was in arcade mode. I haven't really taken him live yet. I usually stick to DPS though, and you're usually support on Overwatch, so I'm excited to get back out there, play a little bit more. And obviously, I love all these other game modes, but Lucio Ball is really the one that hits my heart. I feel like you and I went on a good like 9 or 10 win streak in that one recently. Well, not recently. I guess it was last summer, probably. But that was a good one. Lucio Ball, I think, is a ton of fun. I think it's one of the best game modes out there. Honestly, I wish it wasn't seasonal. I wish it was part of the regular arcade rotation. I'd love to see it more because I could play a ton of Lucio Ball.
Yeah, I would pay for Lucio Ball as a game by itself. I absolutely love Lucio Ball. It's that much fun.
Absolutely. With that, guys, you can check that out. Obviously, John and I would be open to playing with you guys as well. Hit us up on Discord. May 21st, again, is when that drops. Let's get out there. Let's get a six-man squad and play some.
Discord, Twitter, any of the social medias, hit us up there. We'll be more than happy to play with you guys. We're friendly. We're not toxic, Joey. Joey is quite possibly the most toxic person I know.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
He tells the enemy team good luck every game. That's like... It's like counterproductive, man. You know, come on now. You want the other
team to
have fun. I
usually say good luck, have fun too.
No,
you know, so
don't
it doesn't
have
sound
fun.
Super salty.
You don't have fun when you lose. You need the other team to play bad and lose so you can have fun while winning. That's how this works, Joey.
I usually try the let's play better than the other team. Let's not try to tilt the other team like crazy strategy in the beginning.
Tilting's fun.
Usually it happens anyway. It always seems to be a jungler or a top laner that tilts someone. But hey, that's how it works.
Well, that's what happens when you're in the Plastic Four division.
Overwatch League, we just had All-Stars this past week. John, I actually did not get a chance to watch All-Stars. Unfortunately, I just did not have a ton of time, and I thought the event was good last year. I don't think it was as good as some of the stuff we've seen at League of Legends All-Stars before, in particular the 1v1 mode, but they do some cool stuff. I think they do Widowmaker 1v1s, if I remember correctly. They have the two All-Star teams between Pacific and Atlantic. Again, I did not catch it, though. How did the results look?
Yeah, I didn't catch it either.
Oh, perfect.
So fun fact, I was quite busy last week. So it was on late for East Coast people. I believe it started close to 10 or 11 o'clock every night it was on. And I was out doing shenanigans. We're not going to talk about the shenanigans, though, Joey. But no, it was cool. They did... some game modes. They did Sibling Rivalry, which is a 6v6, 3 Genjis, 3 Hanzos per team. They did Healers Never Die, which is supports only. on a control point in Nepal. I thought that was kind of cool. Terrible, terrible damage was a 6v6 damage only one hero limit hybrid on Hollywood. So sorry, your 6v6 bastions only was not actually a thing. Keeping the peace, McCree only on Route 66, 6v6, 12 McCrees at once. That is a lot of Deadeye shots. I did not watch it. I don't want to watch. I didn't watch any of the VODs. That drives me up a wall. I'm pretty sure they got rid of the Widow 1v1s because it was so drawn out. It was so boring to watch. It was so awful. In all honesty, I don't attack things too much in All-Star games. The 1v1 Widow sniper event was not good. It was really bad.
Well, I hate to tell you, John, they did bring it back this year.
No!
Yeah, it's on here the results.
I'm trying to find... Oh, there is. The Widow 1v1.
The Pacific team won that one.
Shocker. Did Atlantic win overall?
Oh, shocker. I see what you did there.
What?
San Francisco Shock is on the Pacific.
Oh.
Come on. Don't make puns and don't even know.
I didn't do that on purpose, Joey. Sorry, I'm not as good.
Unintentional. Unintentional.
Unintentional pun.
Yeah, I mean, it's decent overall. I feel like I don't feel like it's the greatest All-Star event, but even looking at sports, like, All-Star events suffer a lot. There's a lot of ones that don't really quite make it there. The viewership for those is honestly a lot less than a lot of normal games a lot of the time. Overwatch not being any different in this area. I think they are getting creative. Some of the modes you mentioned are kind of fun, and I think this would be a ton of fun to play with the community as well. At the same point, is it really going to be something that's going to suck me in for hours to watch? Probably not. If they did the McCree showdown, the 6v6 McCree at noon, then maybe I would tune in just for the punniness of it. Dude. But overall, like, this just, yeah, it's just not really something that draws me in a ton. I think Widowmaker 1v1s are a cool philosophy idea. I don't know if that's quite what I want to say there. But overall, I think they're exciting to watch in the sense that you're looking at very high caliber mechanics. But at the same point, it almost becomes like a camping type of thing. Who has the best angle from this area? I feel like if you're going to do Widowmaker 1v1s, it has to be quick scopes or something like that. Like, make it interesting. Maybe you code it up a little bit so they can only scope in for a certain amount of time, or they have to do it quick, or it scopes in maybe quicker, but only for a certain amount of time. I feel like they could customize it a bit more, make it a bit more interesting, because I think quick scopes are a lot more fun to watch. It also eliminates a lot of the camping you might see in that type of game mode. So I think they can still improve on this, but I think they are making the right direction, or at least the moves toward the right direction for Overwatch All-Stars. Speaking of the right direction, let's talk about the West, John, because we had an NAEU-MSI final. No, that is not Rift Rivals, guys. This is MSI, the Midseason Invitational for League of Legends. You had the champion of Korea, the champion of China, champion of EU, the champion of NA, the Fongvu Buffalo making their way in as the wild card, and the Flash Wolves from the LMS region. So
I love how you list all of those teams and then go right to the Fongvu Buffalo. It's like, you have the champions of Korea, of China, of EU, of North America, and the Fongvu Buffalo. It's like, you know, oh, we have, you know, Tom Brady, Duke basketball, the LA Lakers with Kobe, and George Mason
that
basketball.
Bench guy.
You know, it's like, oh, that was disappointing. It was the Fongvu
Buffalo.
You just
what
wanted
a team.
To say their name.
I love the Fongvu Buffalo. I'm glad they got to make their way as the wildcard team in Vietnam as well. I think that's pretty exciting. They obviously did not make it out into the knockout stage, though, because those teams were Team Liquid. Wait a minute. I'm in the wrong knockout stage. That's IG and Team Liquid. So Invictus Gaming, they ended up actually choosing their opponent. They had a choice between Team Liquid and G2. They chose Team Liquid. Honestly, I think that was the best choice of the two. G2 a little bit more scary. They feel a bit more potent in many areas than Team Liquid does. But Team Liquid has done well strategically, we've seen in the past. On the other side of the bracket, we had SKT up against G2. Again, SKT did not get a choice here because IG chose Team Liquid. G2 gets defaulted to SKT. Looking at that first round, we had IG up against Team Liquid. John, if you had to predict this, who would you predict won?
For which? I'm sorry, I'm responding to chat.
IG, Team Liquid.
Oh, I would have picked IG hands down. Like, the world champs? There's no way they lose to Team Liquid.
Right, and Team Liquid comes out here and smashes them 3-1. Not only did we not go to a five-game series, like, if Team Liquid was going to win, I would bet all the money it was in five games. Team Liquid closing it out 3-1 in this one. Invictus Gaming just, they looked all right, but they could not adapt. It felt like Team Liquid really knew the style Invictus was going to come in with. It's that very control-heavy, objective-heavy approach. Team Liquid went for early team fights. They went for those early ganks. They went for the early aggression. They took the team fights whenever they had the opportunity. Invictus Gaming, a great team fight team, but overall, the way they really have played out this past year and really last year at Worlds even, they rotate around the map well. It's all in their rotations and their vision control that gives them the lead. When they had a team fight, they did well. But when a team literally drafts to take out you in or take your legs out pretty much from under you in the early game and to team fight around it, that's exactly what Team Liquid did, and Invictus Gaming fell hard. One person I do got to shout out here, Kays over on Team Liquid, one of the analysts. He might also be the player manager as well. I don't exactly remember. But he came from Fnatic. He was with Fnatic in their whole run-up to Worlds. He played and did the strategic stuff up against Invictus Gaming in the group stage. So he played against them twice in the group stage. Then he went on to the Worlds Finals and studied them as well. So when you look at that advantage that he brings in, he knows why Fnatic lost that match. He knows where their disadvantages came in the group stage and where they definitely came in the finals, and he had a whole year to learn from that. I think bringing that experience in from Fnatic and their huge loss in the World Championship, bringing that to Team Liquid, is one of the reasons we saw them really taking a strong foot up over IG in the series.
Yeah, and it was great. The IG press conference afterwards, I almost felt bad for them because like some of them were showing emotions. They were upset that they lost to not just Team Liquid, but an organization from the dreaded North America region. But then, like, I can't remember which player said it, but they're like, oh, no, Team Liquid didn't beat us. We just played horribly. You know, I don't know. Team Liquid kind of looked like they took it to you. It looked pretty well. I mean, Team Liquid changed their style. They played against them in the group stages. Invictus Gaming absolutely demolished them. That's fine. Team Liquid learned from it. Invictus got complacent, and they let Team Liquid change what they're going to do, change their playstyle, and really control the game. IG screwed up. Just admit it. You didn't play bad. You just did everything completely wrong because you got complacent. You were like, we're going to pick Team Liquid. They're easier than G2. We're going to have a quick 3-0, and we'll make it to the finals. Well, 3-1 Team Liquid. Hope you learn next time, IG. North America is finally going to a finals.
Yeah, I don't feel like IG prepared for this team. I feel like they just went in with the philosophy they always go in with. We're this good. They did so well in the group stage. They're ready just to demolish everyone on the way to the final. Then Team Liquid comes up with this new strategy, a strategy IG has really not faced that much before. And Team Liquid showed why they belong there. Not only that, I don't feel like Team Liquid did that well individually. I don't feel like anyone had like particularly stellar performances. Like overall, I really think it came down to the strategic aspect of the way they played the game out and the fact of how they played together as a team, particularly in those team fights and early game aggression. When you look at Team Liquid overall, those stats came because of that early game aggression and team fights. They continued to play around them, and they really forced IG's hand and really made them adapt in their draft, which they did for one of the games before they went back to their old style. That to me was the killer. I think if IG played that team fight style more outside of that third game alone, I think they could have probably come back and reverse swept Liquid, but they wanted to go back to that old style. They did, and they got smashed. SKT G2. G2 comes out of this one, surprisingly enough. Baby Faker took down Faker this time as well. Caps looking really strong in this particular performance, the MVP. Caps is just stellar. I think Wonder was also very good up against SKT's top lane. When it comes down to it, G2 is very explosive. G2 is a very good team, but they're very high risk, very high reward. We've seen them overcommit many times. Obviously, SK2 taking two games off here and taking it to a 5-game series. SKT being the legendary organization with a stellar stacked roster that they have. But G2 showed them they can outlast. G2's creative. G2 is extremely good mechanically. And when it comes down to it, when push comes to shove, if G2 has the coin flip on their side of the way, if Caps is able to get that crazy flash play and end up getting that first blood, things can happen. And G2 showed us here why it can.
Yeah, and just real quick, I need to clarify, shout out to chat for correcting me on this. I completely forgot about this. CLG actually made it to MSI Finals in 2016 against SK Telecom, or T1. I think they're just going by T1 now, whatever. 3-0 in favor of SKT. Not much has changed there. But, cool. So awesome. So Team Liquid makes it back to MSI Finals for North America. Cloud9 still the furthest for a North America team in Worlds. So there we go.
And I think Worlds is a much bigger tournament as well. Oh, obviously, the field's bigger. Teams have had a whole nother split to prepare and practice. So Worlds is your biggest competition, but it's a nice little run-up here. NA and EU in the final is not a bad thing. At the same point, if you look like NA did in the final, it's not exactly a great thing to come home with either. Obviously, Team Liquid going 0-3, G2 taking the win here. But Team Liquid obviously should... they should feel good about the tournament. You get smashed in the finals, but overall, you took down the powerhouse, the world champion in IG in the semifinals to make it to the finals. I feel like they were almost too hyped in a sense. They come up against G2. They're feeling really good taking down IG, but G2 is a completely different team to prepare for. They have a completely different style. They love taking those team fights. Team Liquid cannot use the team fight style against G2 because they will get smashed up against the G2 team doing that. They need to be a bit more creative with their tactics. They were not ready for them here. G2 going 3-0, and Europe looking really good. Fnatic making it to the finals last year at Worlds. G2 going here in the finals. Obviously, the G2 result looking much better than the Fnatic result up against IG. Fnatic went 0-3, G2 here 3-0 in favor of themselves. So I think West in general is looking good, though. Cloud9 making semifinals for the North American side as well in Worlds. Team Liquid making the finals here up against a European powerhouse. I feel like the West looks really good right now. China wants to win on individual plays. Korea wants to win on really warding and vision control as well as rotations. Neither one of these things quite working right now for both these sides because the EU and the NA regions are willing to try different things to adapt, to go off meta, and really try to force the hand and play the role that the other team really does not want to. Whether Team Liquid is a team fighting team or not, they end up playing that style because they know it's a disadvantage for IG. And they really forced their hand in that series. I think overall, we still see NA and EU continuing to grow. And I really would not be surprised if they have another big, strong performance at Worlds this upcoming year. Anything else to add, John, as we wrap this one up?
No, I feel like we've beat the horse dead already. So there you go, Jared. There's your pun, Team Liquid. It's a horse logo.
Yeah, I think G2 beat that horse dead.
Yeah, it's freaking EU. Okay. Well, hold on. I gave my niece a shout out. Now apparently I'm being yelled at because I didn't give my nephew a shout out. Hi, William. Thanks for watching. Also, we're trying to wrap this up so my editor doesn't kill me. All right. Well, Nation, that will do it for another episode of the Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get access to exclusive content that nobody else in the world can get. Is that Tyler in the background there, Joe?
Oh, that is Tyler.
That is Tyler. Let's finish this closing. So shout out to Tyler, who's completely like video bombing this closing here. If you enjoy listening to the Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on iTunes and Google Play, or even shoot us a comment on SoundCloud. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from all of our listeners so much, we have other ways for you to reach out to us. Joey, where else can Level Up Nation go to interact with us and the show?
Level Up Nation, head on over to Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook and find us at the Level Up Podcast. That is the LVLUP Podcast. You can also find us streaming regularly on Twitch, twitch.tv/OTN_live. If you want to check out our cheerleader, maybe we'll throw up a picture on Instagram as well. Again,
LVL.
The Level Up Podcast.
Make sure you tune in next week as we cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. Do your ears a favor. Hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. Do not crash their live stream. And as always,
Level Up.